Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, Jay Fox will share some information about free tax preparation help for Central Ohioans. Jay will also speak with an expert about acetaminophen use during cold and flu season, and he'll chat with a dietitian about the benefits of a high-protein diet. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective.
It's tax season here in Central Ohio. Statewide, that means 5.5 million or so people are going to submit this year. Miyoshi Moses is the Vice President of Volunteer Programs at AARP Foundation and joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what are some of the challenges that older adults, like myself, may be facing this tax season?
Well, Jay, as people age, their personal circumstances may change, and that may affect their tax status. You might find that their income may decrease. They may might not qualify for as many deductions. So it's important for older adults to understand the rules that may apply to them, and the AARP Foundation Tax Aid Program is here to help.
So what does the Tax Aid Program do, and is it specifically only available for people over the age of 50?
AARP Foundation Tax Aid is the largest free volunteer-based tax preparation program in the country. We have more than 28,000 volunteers who are IRS certified and trained to be able to assist with taxes. While anyone is available, can get their taxes prepared, we really focus on older adults with low to moderate income.
So when we say older adults, let's narrow that down. What is the age range and what is the income range of the people that you're servicing?
So really we focus on those adults who are over the age of 50 and they have low to moderate income.
Now, when we say free, because you know there's always got to be a catch somewhere, got to read that fine print, is it really completely free?
It is 100% free. There are no hidden fees, Jay. We are available for any older adult with low to moderate income to be able to help them with their taxes, and we're free of charge. And what we really want to make sure that people can file their taxes without having to pay.
So where can we access this?
You can find your nearest tax aid location using our site locator on our website at aarpfoundation.org/taxhelp. We have sites that are in person, and you can also receive services online.
Well, that's good news because a lot of older people may not feel comfortable sharing their information, and they like that one-to-one face-to-face contact.
Yes, we are all over Ohio in many locations. You might find us in a local library, in a senior center, in a rec room, in a recreation center. We are close to you, and we like to make sure that we are available to anyone who is in need.
What do people need to bring when they come to someone to help them with their taxes?
It is important to bring all the information you need to complete your return. Your Social Security card, a photo ID, any correspondence from the IRS, and any income-related forms like your W-2 or 1099.
Now, there have been a lot of questions this year because it's all over the news. IRS agents are being laid off. What will the federal government's policy, what impact will that have on seniors who are using your service?
Well, right now we have, as I said, 28,000 volunteers who are ready and prepared to serve, ready and prepared to help older adults complete their tax returns.
So when you think about the common questions that taxpayers have had so far this year, what is the number one question that people are wondering about?
Most people are interested in when the deadline for submitting their return is, and this year it's April 15th. They also want to know when they might expect their refund, which is typically within a month of submitting their return. And they also are interested in understanding when they might receive their refund. Anyone can go to the IRS website at irs.gov to check their status.
Miyoshi Moses is the Vice President of Volunteer Programs at AARP Foundation. There is a tax aid program that you can take advantage of either in person or online. And we thank you for being with us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
Ohio is one of the top states in the country for what medical experts claim is the worst flu season in 7 years. The most recent data shows 417 active cases right here in central Ohio. Dr. Kathleen Wilson joins us now on Columbus Perspective to share tips on how to stay safe while taking medicines with acetaminophen during respiratory virus season. Welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me today.
For those people that don't know, because this is the actual name of a drug and not a brand name, what is acetaminophen?
Acetaminophen is actually the most common drug ingredient in America. It's found in hundreds of over-the-counter and prescription medications. And these would include things like pain relievers, fever reducers, sleep aids, and of course, what everyone is dealing with right now with the flu season, the respiratory season of all that we're encountering, many cold, cough, allergy medicines, and some of them are multi-symptom medications. So acetaminophen is actually safe and effective when used as directed, but taking too much can lead to liver damage. So that's why we're here today. We're here to actually emphasize that the maximum recommended adult dose of acetaminophen is 4,000 milligrams in a 24-hour period, and that is with everything collectively.
So in preparation for this interview, I just happened to look in my medicine cabinet this morning, and I found Tylenol, NyQuil, Sudafed, Mucinex, and Theraflu. And I noted that all of those products contain acetaminophen. So how would I know to look for that in other medicines if I wasn't thinking about it?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you, Jay, for looking at your label. That's important. You looked at your label to read it, and we really want to emphasize that for our listeners, that always read and follow what's going on with the label. So when you look at the back on an over-the-counter medication looking for active ingredients like you did, often you will see acetaminophen on many of the labels. It will be highlighted. And when you look at all of your medications across the board, even your prescription medications, you may see terms such as APAP, Acetam, or even some other shortened version. So it's important that you look at this and read it. So I have to congratulate you on that. If you have any questions about the medications you have, certainly you could reach out to your healthcare provider or your pharmacist if you're there picking up your medication. And we always recommend taking only one medicine at a time that contains acetaminophen.
See, and that's the rub, because let's say that you take some NyQuil before you go to bed, but you notice that you've got a headache and you don't associate NyQuil with headache. So you take two Tylenol, for example, to abate the headache, or even two Excedrin, if that's what you choose. But then you're double dosing on the acetaminophen without realizing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why it's so important for us to bring this whole campaign to awareness for everyone that is dealing with currently with all these respiratory illnesses, as well as their regular medications that they might be taking. You know, like you mentioned, the headache, or if they have some type of pain and they're taking a pain reliever or a sleep aid. So bringing this to your awareness is so important. And I'd like to point out to you that the Know Your Dose campaign has a calculator that is actually on their website. It's knowyourdose.org. and it's /calculator. And this is a free and very easy to use calculator that our listeners can actually plug in the medication, plug in the dose, how much they're taking, how often they're taking, and it can give you an idea of whether or not you've met your max, or is to be warning you that you're getting close to that. So it's really important. So we hope that everyone will keep that, you know, information available to them to look at that.
As we're considering how much to take, and we have established in this interview what the daily maximum should be, what are the risks that we're trying to present? I know you said liver disease, but it has to be more than that.
Well, primarily, it is liver disease because acetaminophen is processed through the liver. So it's got to go, so in other words, it is metabolized by the liver. And so therefore, liver disease can lead to a lot of other chronic conditions. We can, you know, liver damage, cirrhosis of the liver. And there's a whole cascade of symptoms that go along with that. But if I could have our listeners really focus in on the fact that acetaminophen, while safe and effective, if used within only 4,000 milligrams per a 24-hour period, they will not have this effect on the liver. But it does have to go through the liver to be processed by the body.
And that's why we need this Know Your Dose calculator. So before we say goodbye, what is that website one more time?
Absolutely. It's knowyourdose.org. And if they want to go directly, you could go and find the calculator, but I'm just going to say knowyourdose.org/calculator will get you right there.
Fantastic. Dr. Kathleen Wilson, thank you for joining us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
Here in Columbus, we're nearing a population of 1 million people. That's a lot of mouths to feed. For children and teens, protein supports growth and development, energy and focus, and overall well-being. And for adults, protein can reduce hunger levels, boost metabolism, and help the body repair itself after injury. Dietitians say beef is a great option because it's high-quality protein, and it also has iron, zinc, and other essential nutrients. Registered dietitian Amy Goodson joins us now on Columbus Perspective to discuss why protein, and especially lean beef, is especially good for health and performance. Amy, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Why is protein so important, not just for athletes, but for everyone, both young and old?
So protein plays an important role in building muscle by providing the body with the building blocks it needs to help fuel recovery after physical activity. And animal proteins, as you mentioned, like lean beef, are really one of the most nutrient-dense, complete proteins available. And that means that it provides your body with the essential amino acids to help it maintain lean muscle mass. And then what's really important to note is as we age, protein also helps fuel stamina. And that's going to be critical for helping adults live independently later in life.
Now, I'm of a certain age, and I also have type A positive blood. And I find that when I don't consume at least 3 portions of red meat a week, my stamina is non-existent. What's going on?
Well, you know, when we talk about lean beef, one of its essential nutrients is iron, and iron helps carry oxygen to the muscle cells. So when we want people to be exercising and feeling good and having that energy, it's really crucial that you're getting those essential nutrients in, and lean beef is going to be an excellent provider of iron that's ultimately going to help you fuel those muscles to get the oxygen to them, which is going to give your body energy.
So how much lean beef should we eat? I mean, how are we balancing this? Like, should we put it in a salad? Are we going out for steaks and baked potato? How does that work?
A lot of different eating plans, but the way I like to tell people to think about it, especially for exercisers and athletes, is building a performance plate by following the 3-part plate rule. And that means making 1/3 of your plate high quality protein like lean beef. That's going to help promote muscle building and recovery. Then we want to make 1/3 of your plate whole grain carbohydrate for that sustained energy. And then, of course, as you mentioned, 1/3 colorful fruits and vegetables, because that's going to give your body added vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fiber. So that can look like a salad with lean beef. It could look like beef and grilled veggie kebabs with maybe a whole grain rice or a whole grain couscous. And then, of course, we want you to fuel that snack time with a combination of protein and carbohydrate as well. So that could be as simple as beef jerky and a banana, or Greek yogurt with some berries, or cheese and whole grain crackers. But it's that combination of protein and carbohydrates that's really going to help you stay sustained with your energy levels throughout the day.
So when you go to the grocery store, specifically to the meat department, and you look at packages of ground beef, it will tell you the fat content. But when you're selecting a steak or a chop or something like that, how do you know which cut of meat to buy?
So what's fantastic is that there's over 36 lean cuts of beef out there. And so when you start thinking about looking at those, like, loins, like sirloin and the different ones, typically I'll tell people, too, look at your marbling in the beef. So when we think about that beautiful red beef, if it has a lot of the white marbling, that typically is going to be an indicator that it has more fat. So we're looking for less marbled beef. And then, of course, like you said, when we talk about the ground beef, whether it's a 90-10 or a 93, looking for those lean cuts so that you are getting that high quality protein, those essential nutrients, but with lower fat.
So the next question I have for you is, when you use that lean beef, what do you do in terms of preparation to augment the loss of the fat that allows it to cook and become so succulent and juicy and tender?
Because even lean beef has an amazing amount of flavor. So that's one of the things that beef is known for, that delicious flavor, its versatility in different meals and dishes. And so when we talk about adding that to lots of meals, you can add it to breakfast. So like one of my favorite recipes is to add it to like a beef sticky bun where it's almost rolled up, think like a cinnamon roll. You've got that lean beef sausage, cheese, and veggies rolled up in a almost like a whole grain pizza dough that you can bake. Then you think about adding a lean beef to like a wrap, or you can add vegetables and a chimichurri sauce. So there's lots of different ways you can take that delicious juicy beef, but then pair it, of course, with whole grains, lots of colorful fruits and vegetables, just to get an overall delicious flavor, but also all of the nutrients that we're wanting people to get at each of their meals and snacks.
So is there a source that our listeners can go to, A, learn more about lean beef, and B, you know, everybody's going to want recipes?
Yes, there is. So you can visit beefiswhatsfordinner.com. Lots of different delicious recipes for literally every meal and snack you can think of. And then there's also going to be some great nutrition tips for fueling exercise, fueling those teens and athletes, and then just overall using beef as a part of a lean, healthy diet to help fuel stamina, fuel energy levels for all of the people, kids all the way to adults.
All right. I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Six ounce filet or 10 ounce ribeye?
6 ounce filet paired with whole grains and colorful fruits and vegetables to complete your plate.
Sounds like a plan. All right. I want to thank Amy Goodson for being with us today. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
Ohio's gubernatorial race is beginning to shape up. Vivek Ramaswamy is now officially joining Attorney General Dave Yost and former school board member Heather Hill as the Republican candidates for governor. Meanwhile, still only one Democrat is in the race at this time, former director of the Ohio Department of Health, Amy Acton. Thanks for joining us for Face the State. I'm Doug Petcash. We start with the governor's race as Ohio officially has another candidate hoping to be the state's top leader.
Thank you, Columbus, for coming out tonight. We're grateful for you.
Vivek Ramaswamy officially launched his 2026 gubernatorial campaign this past week, holding events across Ohio, including in New Albany. The biotech entrepreneur's announcement comes after he ran in the 2024 GOP presidential primary and after leaving President Donald Trump's Department of Government Efficiency last month. On the campaign trail, Ramaswamy laid out his vision for Ohio's future.
I will lead Ohio
Ohio to be the top state in the country to start and grow a new business. I will lead Ohio to be the top state in the country to raise a young family. We will lead Ohio to be the top state in the country where we embrace capitalism and meritocracy instead of apologizing for it. We will lead Ohio to be the top state in the country that takes a hatchet to red tape, overregulation, and bureaucracy.
Meanwhile, the other candidates reacted quickly and critically after Ramaswamy's campaign announcement. Republican Dave Yost sent a statement to 10 TV saying, quote, "I welcome Mr. Ramaswamy to the race for however long he sticks around. We'll see if he actually stays in. Mr. Ramaswamy quit on President Trump and Doge on day one. He quit on Ohio and moved his company to Texas. And he quit his presidential campaign after a devastating fourth place finish in Iowa." And Democrat Amy Acton posted on social media saying, quote, "Vivek Ramaswamy promises to do to Ohio what Musk is doing to America. Congress is poised to slash Medicaid, which covers 800,000 Ohioans, to give tax cuts to billionaires. Ohio needs a governor who rejects the billionaire agenda and puts the well-being of everyday Ohioans first," end quote. The Ohio gubernatorial election is scheduled to take place on November 3rd of 2026, so there's still a long way to go. Governor Mike DeWine is term limited and cannot run for re-election. Turning now to the State House, the State Senate passed major changes to the state's marijuana laws. The bill now heads to the House. Republicans supporting the bill say it provides better oversight of testing, packaging, and advertising of marijuana and protects Ohio's kids from exposure to the drug. Democrats opposing Senate Bill 56 say the restrictions in it go too far. They argue it ignores what Ohioans wanted when they overwhelmingly voted to legalize recreational marijuana in 2023. Here's what the bill does. It calls for lowering the number of plants allowed to be grown at home from 12 to 6. It only permits the smoking or vaping of marijuana in private homes. The bill would also lower the THC levels from a maximum of 90% to 70%, making the marijuana less potent. It also caps the number of dispensaries in the state at 350.
Senate Bill 56 is a great bill because it's reasonable, appropriate. It cuts down on the illicit marijuana market, and it's truly about protection and safety of children.
What everyday Ohioans say they want, they pass a ballot initiative, they expect what they pass to be the rule of law, and I think they should be very upset about the fact that the Republicans are changing course on them and ignoring their voice.
State Senate Minority Leader Nikki Antonio says Democrats also want the bill to include funding for people looking to expunge their criminal records for minor marijuana possession convictions. Huffman says that will likely be addressed in budget discussions. Lawmakers say the excise tax on marijuana will also likely be addressed in budget discussions. Right now, it stands at 10%. Some Republican state lawmakers are now pushing to start investing taxpayer money in cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin. Bill sponsor, State Representative Steve Demetrio, says Ohio has a lot to gain by investing in cryptocurrencies because their market values are growing quickly. House Bill 18 would allow the state treasurer to invest up to 10% of interim funds from the General Revenue Fund and two other funds in digital assets or cryptocurrencies. It does not mandate these investments. Interim funds are money in the Treasury that is not needed to meet current demands so it can be invested. The treasurer could only invest in digital assets traded on major stock exchanges, such as the New York Stock Exchange. Committee members had questions and concerns about crypto market volatility and security of the taxpayer money.
How much do you take the risks into consideration?
Sure. I mean, volatility, just like any asset class, should always be a concern, especially when we're talking about taxpayer money. Look, we're not going to be day trading. If this bill passes, I don't think the treasurer, just like any of the investments they make, they're not planning on day trading. This is going to be a long-term asset to unlock value for Ohioans.
The bill also clarifies that state retirement system boards can make similar investments of pension funds. State Representative Erica White has reservations about the possible impact on police officers, firefighters, teachers, and others.
Pensions are what workers have in the state of Ohio when they're public sector. There's no Social Security. And so we just have to be very careful with something so volatile that could end people's retirement or their chances to retire.
Demetrio says the bill does include security measures to protect the taxpayer money. This bill still has a long way to go before coming up for a vote. Some Ohio lawmakers are now trying to eliminate ticket and arrest quotas for law enforcement agencies across the state. The bill has bipartisan support. A quota is a mandate of a certain number of arrests or citations an officer must meet in a specific time period. Republican Representative Kevin Miller is a former Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper. He says OSHP operates without quotas, and so should the rest of the state.
It's very simple. When we need to issue a citation, we will issue you a citation. When we need to issue you a warning, or we think a warning will suffice, we'll issue you a warning. That discretion should lie with our officers, not some arbitrary number that someone pulled out of the air and said you have to issue X amount of citations.
Lawmakers introduced a similar bill last year. It failed to make it out of committee. A massive transportation budget proposal is heading to the state Senate. The $11.5 billion budget unanimously passed the House. Most of that funding would be used in statewide highway construction and maintenance projects. It also appropriates $200 million for public transit. As for safety, the bill would establish a new road safety pilot program to protect construction workers. State lawmakers are also now proposing more changes to Ohio schools. Two Republican representatives are reintroducing a bill that will require students to take a computer science course in order to graduate. And another Republican lawmaker is introducing new legislation that would increase instructional hours in schools. It's not clear how much support either of these proposals has. Lawmakers are putting forth dozens and dozens of bills as this new General Assembly picks up steam. The Ohio Legislative Black Caucus alone has more than two dozen. Next on Face the State, the focus this year for this legislative group with a history dating back more than 50 years. And later, 10 investigates show how addiction can lead to a cycle of prostitution and human trafficking. But what happens to the people who are soliciting sex?
When you pull up, you know darn well that that's a prostitute. You know darn well that you're paying someone for a sex act, and you know darn well what you're doing.
This legislator wrote a law to punish those paying for sex, but are the courts using it? Why she's frustrated, coming up on Face the State.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
At our first 10 Listens town hall, community members in the Hilltop brought up safety concerns about prostitution. After a months-long investigation, 10TV has answers about what lawmakers, the city, and community members are doing to hold the ones soliciting the prostitution accountable and make the streets safer. Rochelle Aline with our 10 Investigates team explains.
In November, we showed you how addiction can lead to a cycle of prostitution and make people vulnerable to human trafficking. But what happens to those who are soliciting those services? Well, after a viewer question, we went digging, and the answer might be controversial.
Nobody wants to stand out on the corner and sell themselves for drugs or money or whatever they're doing it for.
And yet right here in central Ohio, that's exactly what's happening. It's a cycle Representative Cindy Abrams saw firsthand as a police officer. And when she was elected to state office in 2019, her first bill aimed to toughen the punishment for the people paying, better known as Johns. It made it a misdemeanor with up to 6 months in jail.
When you pull up, you know darn well that that's a prostitute, and you know darn well that you're paying someone for a sex act, and you know darn well what you're doing.
10 Investigates wanted to see how well the bill is working. Our team pulled all of the cases for engaging in prostitution filed in Franklin County Municipal Court from May of 2021 to October of 2024. We found 456 closed cases, and almost 80% were knocked down to a lesser charge of disorderly conduct.
Why are they getting pled down?
On the demand side, on the male side, typically men, is, you know,
how do we educate the men of the dangers of human trafficking and exactly what act they're engaging in?
City Attorney Zach Klein says they're focused on education. They make first-time offenders take the Franklin County Solicitor Education Program. It's run by the organization She Has a Name.
Human trafficking is a business. It operates on the law of supply and demand. And if we're only caring for survivors after they've come out of being traumatized, then we're never actually stopping the problem from happening.
Over the last 20 years, the program has worked with more than 1,000 men. But it's tough to track success because they primarily deal with first-time offenders. But organizers say anonymous surveys offer them a glimpse into how it's working.
Over three-quarters of them said, like, because I know now that many people engaged in prostitution are there by force or have experienced trauma, I'm not going to engage in this again.
But if somebody's watching this and they feel like that's too lenient, what response do you have to somebody that's saying, okay, I get that, but can there not be both a harsh punishment and education?
I understand there may be criticism to this, but the data shows that our methodology is working. And if the data changes, then we'll change.
But not everyone sees it that way.
I think it's frustrating for not just the victim when the crime is pled down, but it's frustrating for law enforcement.
We contacted the Franklin County Municipal Court to see if their lead judges would talk to us about what goes into their decision to accept these plea deals. They declined a sit-down interview, but answered some questions via email. Their response says in part, quote, judges consider many factors in sentencing, including the severity of the crime, community safety, restitution, criminal history, and whether there is a joint agreement between the parties for a specific sentence. To read their full statement, head to 10tv.com.
The Fan.
The Ohio Legislative Black Caucus was founded in 1967. Today, in this 136th General Assembly, it is made up of 17 members from both the Ohio House and the Senate. As Black History Month wrapped up, the members held a news conference at the State House to lay out their legislative priorities for this General Assembly. They say they've introduced bills addressing criminal justice, tax issues, health and safety, education, and more. Here's a sample of the 26 bills in their legislative package. The School Bus Safety Act, a bill to increase the state minimum wage, the insulin price bill, legislation to prohibit housing payment discrimination, and authorizing a tax credit for handgun training and firearm storage. Joining me now to talk about the Legislative Black Caucus's priorities are State Senator Herschel Craig of Columbus and State Representative Dontavius Gerrels, also of Columbus. They are also both in Democratic leadership positions as assistant minority leaders in the House and Senate, respectively. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today.
Happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Senator, first of all, I want to start with you. You know, the Black Caucus was formed at a pivotal time in American civil rights history. In your opinion, how important was the formation of this organization nearly 60 years ago?
You know, absolutely essential. You've got to remember we just had the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the Fair Housing Act of 1968. And those brave souls with the, you know, all of the courage that they represented at that time, Representative C.J. McGlynn from Dayton, legendary legislator, and many others decided, for many of the reasons why we're going to be talking about today, it is essential, it is critical. I think it's the oldest caucus in this nation before the Congressional Black Caucus. And so I think looking at issues of health care and education and tax reform and, you know, housing, which is absolutely critical right
now.
We'll
talk more about that.
And so I appreciate your question, but it's absolutely pertinent that the work that we continue to do as Ohio Legislative Black Caucus continues.
Senator, thank you. I gave that, you know, brief overview of what your legislative package is. Representative Gerrels, what is the overriding theme of the legislation the caucus is putting forward this session?
Well, Doug, thank you for having me. Happy Black History Month. As I like to say, every day is Black History Month for me and for Senator Craig. You know, the truth is affordability is on the top of minds of so many working families and families across the state. And for us as a caucus, we want to make sure that we do everything we can to make it easier for families to live, work, and literally thrive in this state. From raising the minimum wage to a addressing water quality, to addressing property taxes, increasing the homestead exemption, like things that we know will make a real difference in the material conditions of people in the state, we are committed to doing as a caucus. And we're also fighting against bad bills, bills that remove history from schools, bills that remove the ability for us to have diversity, equity, inclusion, right? Things that will ensure that we are going to build the type of Ohio that puts all of us at front and center so that we all can thrive.
And Senator, you served on the Senate Select Committee
Yes.
on Housing last year, did a lot of work. There are bills coming forth from that. Working to find solutions for more affordable housing. Are some of the measures the committee came up with being put forth, and what's the goal of those measures in order to help Ohioans?
Doug, thank you for asking that question. You're absolutely right. We spent 6 months mm-hmm. In the Senate. It's bipartisan way, mm-hmm. traveling around the state. Not just in urban areas, but suburban areas and certainly rural areas, where we found children and families sleeping in cars, and that's not okay. And so this is not an esoteric experience. Families, we recognize now we've got about 300,000 gap in units for accessible housing. Even in the great city of Columbus, which I love so dearly, we've got about 35,000 a gap in affordable housing. And so the policy priorities that we're looking to move forward are absolutely critical. Yeah. Representative Gerald mentioned certainly what we can do with Homestead and other other initiatives. The simple truth is I have working with Senator Blessing from Cincinnati, a circuit breaker bill.
Yes.
That's what we're
yes.
calling it.
Yes.
We have a number of other initiatives with Senator Reynolds, because my hope is that we will get something done. It's yes. not simply good enough to just sponsor a bill and let it sit on a shelf.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We literally have to get something done for families because in terms of African Americans, there's over 400,000 African Americans that are paying more than 50% of their income.
Mm-hmm.
But any family we talk about housing, and the renters are at this point,
mm-hmm.
There's a disparity even with our renters. And, of course, as you've seen, the rents have gone up exponentially.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. You talked about bipartisanship. With what the Select Committee did. In a situation where you have the House and Senate, the Republicans have that supermajority.
Trifecta.
So how important is it to, work across the aisle and get, support from Republicans for some of these measures that you're trying to put forth?
It's incredibly important. I think that these bills will not pass unless we have Republican support, to quite frankly, because we're both Senate and the House, we're in a minority.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for me, every single day as I go into the State House, I am thinking about, and I know my caucus members are thinking about, how do we connect the work that we're doing in our particular districts with the real realities of families all across the state, and connecting with our colleagues to say, this does not just impact my district, this impacts your district too. For example, when we talk about lead lines, we are one of the states that have the most lead service lines in the country. And so when you look at lead poisoning is not just impacting places like Cleveland and Columbus, it's impacting places in Scioto County, Claremont County, Putnam County. And so what are we doing to make sure that we're connecting with our colleagues to say, when we pass these bills, it doesn't just make a difference in my district, it makes a difference in every single household across the state of Ohio.
Ohio State University announced this week it's cutting diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and positions like universities across the nation. As you know, the Trump administration issued a Friday deadline to do this or risk, yeah. Having their mm-hmm. funding pulled. So, Senator, I'll start with you. What do you think about this movement to eliminate DEI programs and positions?
Doug, I'm deeply, deeply troubled by that. The question becomes whether or not that it's censorship, and many of us believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing regarding DDI. Mm-hmm. It serves veterans, it serves the disabled, it serves lots of folks.
Mm-hmm.
And those that have benefited from it, they didn't get a handout, they worked for that.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those students have been exceptional. And so this whole question, and what is it doing, and I fundamentally believe it is hurting not the students of Ohio, it's hurting our state, and it's certainly hurting our future.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply troubled by it. We've got so many things that we need to be doing as a legislature. We've talked about this housing issue. We've got these critical issues of health around our state. We've got compelling issues around education and fairness and around that issue. We've got these large, very serious issues, and we need all hands on deck. And so I am deeply troubled by it. And I know that my colleagues in the House are as well. The Senate, as you know, we took a position. All nine members of my caucus stood on the floor of the Senate raising this issue and the serious nature of this issue.
Representative Gerald, your take?
You know, I'm hurting for students today, quite frankly. When we think about the moral scholarship, when you think about the Appalachian scholarships that are likely to be pulled, or if students are not going to likely get those scholarships moving forward. When I think about the Hale Center and every single student that walked through that building who said it was because of this belonging that happened in these programs, in the community that was built, that I was able to actually successfully graduate from The Ohio State University. And so I am deeply troubled, and I know many of the alumni are deeply troubled about what is going to be the next step. You know, just think about this, Doug. There was a report that came out that talked about the largest school, one of the largest schools in the country, had some of the smallest enrollment for black and brown students, right? I do not want to go back to those days. I believe that The Ohio State should think about how we're going to accept all students, support all students, and uplift all students. And if these programs made a difference in the lives of these students, then we should not be taking those programs away.
Representative Gerald, Senator Craig, thank you again for coming in today and for your time. I really appreciate it. We have to end the conversation there.
Thank you.
All right, Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.